Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Karma You podcast. This is your host, Chloe Brotheridge. I'm a coach, a hypnotherapist, and I'm the author of The Anxiety Solution and Brave New Girl. And this podcast is all about helping you to become your calmest, happiest, and most confident self. Hello, hello. Thanks so much for joining me today. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're having a good February so far. I am pleased to share with you this episode where I'm talking to Holly and Adam Hustler, who are a married couple. They are a yoga teacher. Adam's a yoga teacher. Holly is a yoga teacher and a sound healer or sound therapist. And I was on their podcast last year and I just love talking to them. I love the conversation that we had and I wanted to have them on this podcast as well. So we talk about actually a lot of different things, and the conversation meanders in some really interesting places, but the main things we talk about are how yoga and sound healing work to reduce anxiety. They share about their own tools, the things that they use themselves to stay calm. We get into this topic of managing comparison, and Adam shares a lot about how being in the yoga industry, it's very easy to compare yourself with everyone on Instagram and everyone sharing the amazing things that they're doing, you know, professionally. It can be really hard not to compare yourself. And so we get into a really interesting conversation about this and how actually when you peel below the surface of anyone that you meet, doesn't matter how successful they appear, everyone is struggling with something, absolutely everyone. And so I hope you enjoy this conversation. We had a really interesting chat. And yeah, lots of different avenues that we went down. And so if you haven't already, I'm inviting you to check out a new free resource that I've made. It's the High Functioning Anxiety Workbook that helps you to discover the number one thing that's holding you back in terms of your anxiety and the most important step that you can take in overcoming it. So to grab that, you can head over to my website, karma-you.com/workbook, and get that for free. So I hope you love that. Let's get into the interview with Holly and Adam Hustler. So welcome, Holly and Adam. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you both today?
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, good. We're caffeinated. We've had a productive morning. We start each morning now with watching birds. We've got this crabapple tree in our garden, full of crabapples, obviously. And there's like 7 or 8 different species some days, yeah, including parakeets.
Parakeets, they're bright green. And the contrast of those against the red crabapples is just so beautiful. We're such old people.
Yeah,
now, so
that's how we start our day. We start our day with occasional fox watching if we get up early enough.
Oh, the foxes. Yeah, it's been a nice slow morning. Nice and sunny here as well.
Lovely, lovely. Yeah, where I live at the moment, there's loads of birds, loads of trees and bushes for the birds to live in, and it makes such a difference just hearing them like wake up to the sound of bird song, and it's like such a lovely thing. So I totally understand that. Yeah.
Another little thing that helps in the morning is we have wind chimes now, like quite good wind chimes just outside our front door, and just having that sound just occasionally there, just ding-a-ling.
Nice.
Such a treat.
And just a contrast of being, you know, moving from, well, I was in Brixton once upon a time, and it was just like a constant party 24/7 outside my window. So it's really nice to wake up to peace.
Yes. I used to live on Broadway Market in East London. I don't know if you know it, but it's a loud road where everyone is drinking 24/7 outside your room. So definitely, yeah, agree. It's nice to be somewhere quiet.
And you've got a good mixer, haven't you? Like hipsters, partiers, And then kind of quite a big homeless community around there as well. So it's all hours, isn't it?
Everyone welcome.
Yeah, there was a lovely chap called Sharky. He used to sit outside our door selling ashtrays made out of beer cans. He was a lovely man, but he was quite loud. So that was the only drawback of that.
Well, at least he's being creative.
Yes, exactly. Very creative, very creative. I'd love to start with just hearing a bit about you guys and what it is that you do and how do you get to do the work that you do today. I don't know if you want to start, Holly.
Yeah. Oh, she picked me. Okay. Gosh, I never know when to sort of how far back to go, but I think I'll start, I guess. What I do at the minute is I'm a sound healer and I'm a musician and a little bit of yoga teaching as well, which is sort of filtering out as I'm moving towards the sound and the music a little bit more. I'll go back to when I was in a girl band a few years ago. Gosh, this must have been 10 years ago now. I think it was early 20s, mid 20s. I just got back from traveling with the boyfriend at the time, and I was having a bit of a, oh God, what am I doing with my life? Because we were going to go off traveling again. And I just thought, I need to knuckle down and do something. And I just thought, what do I love? What would be my absolute dream job? And I just remember so clearly, I sat in my bedroom and I typed in, I just thought, I would love to be in a girl band. So I just typed in girl band auditions. And the first thing that came up was an advert for a girl band audition. It said, up and coming girl band, looking for the last member, preferably 19 to 24, preferably blonde, preferably about 5'5". And I was like, tick, tick, tick. And I just thought this, and I wasn't really a believer and meant to be at the time. I wasn't really into all of that kind of stuff, but just something inside me said, I'm going to get this part. And I thought, God, poor boyfriend, because I'm going to have to tell him that I can't go back to New Zealand next week. So long story short, I went to the audition the following day and I got the part. And, you know, we got on so well, me and the girls, and it was just a really amazing 3-year journey from then on. So that's kind of, I mean, I've always been musical, but that was kind of when I made it into a bit of a career for myself, which was amazing. And it was such an incredible time of my life. But I guess looking back, it never felt completely aligned, because although we had so much fun and I was singing and dancing, it was never really, we were very much a product. So we were told what to wear, told, you know, what lyrics to sing, how to dance. So I'll get on stage and shake my bum and do my thing. But I kind of felt like, I guess I was putting on an act in a way, like it wasn't really, you know, music from my soul. But saying that, you know, we did some really cool things. We supported Westlife at the O2 Arena and around the UK and Ireland, Little Mix, all sorts of stuff, which was just amazing, like such a great opportunity. And after a while, it just sort of naturally came to an end. We realized, you know, we weren't going to get anywhere big in quotation marks, even though I sort of felt like I'd got most things out of it. I never really wanted the fame. I just loved being with the girls and doing this for a living. So I tried to sort of make it on my own musically a little bit after that. But again, it just wasn't really clicking into place. And I think at the time I was fully into partying. I was living in London with some girlfriends, living a hardcore party lifestyle. You know, being in the girl band, it sort of lends itself to that sort of lifestyle, which gradually over time led to me feeling really pretty lost and just directionless and kind of unsure of who I was. And I think that that's just standard for your early 20s, but you don't really know it at the time. So the girl band came to an end. I broke up with a boyfriend. So I was heartbroken and completely broke at the same time. I remember being in Tesco's and looking at all the food and thinking, I don't actually know how I'm going to eat dinner tonight, because I think I had £3.40 in my bank account or something like that. So I ended up having to move home with my parents, felt like such an absolute loser, turned my back on music, which really, really broke my heart. But I'd also been practicing yoga during this sort of the last year, and that had really, really helped me in a lot of ways. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go and do a yoga teacher training. And that was a massive turning point for me, because I really felt that was my rock bottom during that time. And I just felt sort of, yeah, very anxious, very, you know, waking up every morning, not in a good place, not wanting to get out of bed. And long story short, I won't go on for too much longer, but yoga, I guess, and I really think that yoga does this. It bridges you back to the thing that you're supposed to be doing with your life. That's just my sort of opinion anyway. So it naturally led me back to music in the form of sound healing. So I'd been following this lovely woman on Instagram called Carly Grace. And actually, just going to be honest, I just love the look of the sound bowls. They were so beautiful, like really pretty and rainbow colors. And I was so drawn to that. And I thought, oh, I've just got to get involved with this. So I ended up going to a sound journey at Tri Yoga Camden. And actually, funnily enough, I'm teaching there tonight, doing a sound journey, which is amazing. And not only did, you know, it provide the most deeply nourishing, beautiful experience with, you know, the vibrations of the sound bowls, but the next day I just felt like, I remember we were in the flat in Highgate where we used to live in North London, and the sun was coming through the window the next day, and I just felt so peaceful. Like, I don't know, like something had just shifted and everything was okay. It's like I was so deeply connected to this deep trust in knowing that I was in the right place, that I was, you know, being supported on my journey, that everything was going to be okay. And I sort of pieced the things together and I thought, wow, is that the power of sound healing? Because I've heard that it's powerful, but that's amazing. So I ended up investing in some bowls and I thought, I have to bring this into my, you know, to my students and my practice. And I ended up singing in Shavasana with the bowls at one point. I just had this voice saying, just sing. And I was like, no, I don't want to sing. But something told me it'd be really healing. So I started singing and I thought it sounded terrible, but people seemed to enjoy it. And that's when I realized how powerful, you know, voice and sound healing is. And so, yeah, long story short, I was led back to music, but in a really healing capacity, in a way that feels so aligned and that I can actually really make a difference in the world. So I'm so happy to be doing what I'm doing here today. And that's where I am now.
Yeah, how awesome that you had that experience. No, how awesome you had that experience of being in a girl band and having that whole experience, and then could bring back your love of music in a way that was more nourishing to you and more kind of aligned with what you really wanted to do. Yeah. And I do want to ask you more about sound healing. I'm going to ask you that in a moment, but
right.
It was, what are you saying, Adam?
Nothing. My mouth is open.
Scratching the beard.
Can you share a bit about what you do then, Adam? Because I know you're more on the yoga side, or more fully focused on the yoga side of things. And how did you get into yoga?
So it's in my boy band days. No. So I was training to be a lawyer. So I was at Durham University training to be a lawyer. That was a career plan. While I was there, I ended up thinking, and you know, I was reading a lot of like Paulo Coelho and Albert Camus and lots of stoicism at the time, like an impressionable 18-year-old. And it was really changing my view on life. So although I ended up doing law at uni, I did a lot of kind of charity work, non-profit work on the side while there, like managing a few charities that were university-based, mainly involving young people. And I just really thought, you know, like, even at that point, and it's kind of, I didn't realize it was yoga, but it kind of is, you know, thinking, you know, our quality of life, our happiness isn't judged by the size of our TV. Like, if we think about buying a bigger and bigger TV or bigger and bigger house, then that is endless. That's this endless wow. We can just keep going and keep going and keep going. And actually, I thought at that time, I want to do something where every day I enjoy what I do. Even if that means making a little bit less money. And that was my thoughts as like an 18, 19-year-old. So post-uni, thought actually my career is going to be working with young people in the charity sector. I enjoy it. I'm good at it, it seems. And, you know, taking my skills from law into that sector. And that's kind of what I did. And yoga was always there on the side alongside boxing and running and athletics. And I did a bit of yoga at uni, but the moment I really got into it was when I'd moved back to Birmingham. I didn't have a lot of friends left in Birmingham. I kind of went to a private school. I got an assisted place, which was like very small fees, but in a private school. And in the area I was from, no one went to that private school. So going back to this part of Birmingham where I didn't really know anyone anymore. Everyone had gone, or there was just never anyone there in the first place. I split up, or was splitting up with an ex at the time. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Like at that point, I hadn't got the job in this charity sector. I was kind of in between a little bit. And I thought, what can I do? I'm boxing, but I want to do something where I can kind of be around nice people, in a sense, outside of work. So shall I do a dance class or shall I do more yoga? And I decided to do more yoga. And I used to use it as an opportunity just to kind of reevaluate where I wanted to be. So I'd get to the class half an hour early. I'd read my Hellenistic philosophies. That's what I was into still before class. I'd process. I didn't necessarily meditate at that point, but I did reflect. And then I'd practice my yoga. and then often walk home, like multiple hour walk home, just to kind of to allow myself to reset. But eventually started to do well in the charity sector, like managing my last proper job, as it were, was managing these two massive buildings at multi-million pound redevelopments, where we had kind of youth workers, sexual health workers, but also these centres were commercially viable in their own right, as in we would rent the space to MTV, then we'd rent the space to conferences, etc. And like it was a good job, but I became a bit disenchanted with the charity sector. And at the time, while I had that job, I was actually at that point teaching yoga. I only started teaching not because for career change, but just because I was like, I want to advance my knowledge. And then because I was kind of at the time an unusual teacher in that I was a heterosexual male with no dance or hippie background, I was kind of unusual in the yoga world at that point. So a few people kind of maybe gave me some teaching jobs for that reason, because I attracted a certain client base. And then I realized I was okay at it. And at one point I had this kind of big job, and I was teaching 10 classes a week at the same time.
So, wow. Yeah,
that was insane. That was insane. I didn't need the money at that point either, but I enjoyed it. And without going too deep into it, I quit the charity sector thinking maybe I'd just go into like hotel management. I thought that could be an interesting transfer of skills. And I even considered, you know, how would one manage a theme park? You know, that could be. I wanted to manage Alton Towers. I thought that could be how I use my skills. But while I was deciding what theme park to manage, I started to do kind of consultation work for some yoga studios in terms of their operations. That's kind of my speciality at that point. And just got more and more yoga teaching jobs. And then, you know, soon enough, I was teaching 26 classes a week and helping manage a studio and doing some consultation. And it just went from there to there. So now, you know, I've taught everywhere. I've taught, I think I worked out in over 20 countries, over 60 studios, taught online for many years, also conferences, workshops, trainings all over the world. It wasn't the plan, but that's what I've ended up doing.
Amazing. Yeah, interesting how you didn't sort of decide, right, I'm going to be a yoga teacher and kind of build it from there. It was kind of like a sideways moving into it, and it kind of just grew from there.
And I do think that's really, really important for anyone deciding to do a career change. You really need to understand if you like doing that thing to begin with. It's to try and work it out. And just because you, let's say, like teaching yoga or like observing cool graphic design doesn't mean you'd like the process of being a graphic designer or the process of teaching yoga. They're very, very, very different things. So I always try and get to be quite wary if they want to make a career jump into a complete unknown, because they might not like that thing, the work of doing it, rather than just the enjoyment of doing it for enjoyment's sake.
That's such a good point. I think there's so many people now wanting to change careers. I think it's called the Great Resignation, where kind of four people like wanting to leave. And so there are probably quite a few people who are thinking, oh, maybe I would like want to be a yoga teacher, I want to do this. But yeah, I think you're right. The actual bit, teaching yoga is a different thing to doing yoga. It's like a totally different thing. Yeah.
A whole different ball game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So most people listening to this will be struggling with some kind of anxiety, or at the very least, stressed. I think everyone, I mean, is everyone stressed? I think probably everyone is stressed in the world, in the West at least. And I was really curious to hear from you both. Firstly, like, how do you manage your own stress, or indeed any anxiety that you might experience? And how does sound healing and yoga kind of support people with that?
For me, there's no like magical, you know, silver bullet, or just, for me, it's been a long process. Like I was saying, back in the day, you know, in my 20s, feeling a little bit lost and anxious, it's really hard to see sort of the light at the end of the tunnel when you're in that place. But from that place is when I discovered meditation, yoga, and, you know, down the line, sound healing. And it was my want to get myself out of that place that that made me do it. So it's, for me, it was very much baby steps. It was starting really small every day. You know, I discovered Tony Robbins, who's an amazing like American coach. And I remember I used to walk to the woods every morning and just say this affirmation in my head, every day in every way, I'm getting stronger and stronger. And just, you know, just that really, really helped me at the time. And then I'd go and be in nature and I'd do, you know, 5-10 minute meditations every day. Over time, I found that to really, really calm me. And because I found that it stopped me from looking outside of myself. And I think often that's where the anxiety and the stress comes from. It's because most of us are looking outside, you know, wanting to people please and worrying about getting judged by other people. And I think that's so much of the root of what anxiety and stress is, or at least mine anyway. You know, speaking from experience in the past, that's definitely where it's come from. So, you know, these practices that ask us to go inside connect us back to ourselves and the knowledge that actually, you know, we are enough in every moment, and that peace is not an outside game. It's all there inside. Happiness is inside you. So just by consciously breathing, and it's really that simple, I think, just carving out time every day, which I still do to this day, every single day. Well, that's a lie. Probably 5 or 6 days a week I meditate. I definitely am really devoted to this path of like of healing. So small baby steps and doing those practices that ask me to go inside and, you know, remember myself essentially, and that everything's okay, is what has been, you know, the thing that saved me, I guess, and has put me on this path. So yeah, I mean, yeah, meditation, yoga, sound healing, it's a boring answer, but that is what's worked for me.
No, not at all. And I like that idea of baby steps, because I think often we do get into these things because we're struggling and we're searching for some way to help ourselves, like we're anxious, depressed, or, you know, just, yeah, in emotional pain of some kind. And when you first delve in, it can seem quite overwhelming because there's so many options of things you could try or so many different courses that you could do. But yeah, I like the idea of just doing little bits here and there, and yeah, doing it doing baby steps. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, just finding the thing that works for you, I think, because like you said, there is so much out there. So just trying a few things and sticking with something that really works.
But can I ask you about sound healing? Because is it what I understand of it is it's not just about the nice sounds, it's doing something, it's vibrations, is that right? Can you sort of explain how that works?
In a nutshell, I always explain it as it's science-based, because it works with energy, frequency, vibration to essentially shift us and our cells back into balance and harmony again. Because, you know, we are made up of hundreds of thousands of vibrating cells. We are in vibration. So it's the use of vibration to shift us back to our natural state, which is balance and harmony. So our body is always trying to come back to that state. But, you know, things like, well, life pulls us off balance, out of tune. So because I'm not great at explaining science, I'm not naturally scientifically gifted, let's just say. So I love to think of or use analogies to help me and other people to understand. So something that's really helped me is if you think about the orchestra and the orchestra has got all the different components, the strings, the bass, the drums, the guitar, the vocals, etc. And you know, an orchestra would never sit down and just start playing their instruments because it would sound horrific. They take their time to sit and make sure they're tuning themselves and tuning their instruments before they start playing their amazing piece of music, so that they can perform, you know, optimally and produce a beautiful, harmonious piece of music for the audience most of the time. So then, you know, if you think of the human body as an orchestra, so you've got, you know, all of the systems, the blood, the organs, even the thoughts and the emotions, which is everything is just energy, but we don't really do much to basically tune ourselves. So it results in, you know, all of these different frequencies from left, right, and center, just in chaos a lot of the time. This can be things from, you know, repetitive, anxious thoughts that we're not managing because, you know, we're not really taught how to manage our emotions a lot of the time. Even, you know, sitting on the Northern Line and the absolute invasion of that horrible sound from the tube, even that is creating chaos and disharmony in our body. And it's all of these things are adding up to essentially knock us off tune, so that we feel anxious, stressed, out of balance, basically. So we really need tools like sound healing to pull us back into, to shift us back to our natural state of being. And, you know, for me, it's, you can hear all of that and be like, okay, but come along and experience it. I felt it for myself. You know, that's exactly what I felt the day after. And I say it's science-based, but it's also definitely mixed with a bit of magic and the unknown as well. And I can't explain that bit. But I've had all sorts of people message me, like someone messaged me the other day saying she'd accessed this memory from her childhood that's really helped her to overcome something that she has felt so blocked around for so many years. Yeah, and it was a message of gratitude because, you know, it's a form of meditation. So it pulls you out of your head, out of your thinking mind, and it helps you to drop into deeper states of awareness. Like, oh God, always forget the name of the waves, but I think it's the delta and the theta brainwave state. So the vibrations coming out of the bowls will, it's called a harmonic resonance or entrainment. It'll entrain the brainwaves into these theta, delta, deep states of meditation, sometimes sleep, which is where the body can repair itself the most, which is where you can access, you know, creativity, clarity, peace, deep peace, connection with your intuition if you're into that. And, you know, we can't access a lot of that when we're stuck in our heads and we're anxious and we're worried all the time. So it's, I guess it's a journey back to yourself and back to all of the answers that you'll ever need, which are all inside you. And I always love to set an intention before, you know. Another woman recently said, I wanted to find the answer for a book that I'm trying to write. So I want a title for it. And it dropped in, you know, when she was in that state, that's when it came to her. So setting in a conscious intention is really beautiful way to help you as well. You'll always receive what you need, and it's not always going to be comfortable, you know, because healing is not always comfortable. Sometimes it can bring stuff up to the surface that needs to be looked at and acknowledged. Maybe something that you haven't thought about for a while. But if you find the right teacher, someone that really holds you safely in the space, then it's such a beautiful healing journey. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're just going to come away feeling so relaxed and peaceful and harmonious. But there's also going to be that little soul nudge every now and again going, here you go. This is something, a little shadow part of you that you need to look at and acknowledge. And this could be the key to answering why you're anxious all the time. So I could talk for hours, but I should let Adam have a go now. But that's pretty much it in a big nutshell.
sounds amazing. It's the same as in hypnotherapy. We get into a different brainwave pattern, delta and theta, and it's very healing, and you can access different parts of yourself and memories. And yeah, how amazing that sound healing can help people to have those insights and that deep rest that they need. And yeah, it sounds beautiful as well. I haven't been to one of your groups yet, but I've heard you on Instagram. Yeah, I'll definitely have a look at when you're doing them, but try and come. But yeah, thank you for sharing that. Adam, what about you? I'm curious in terms of your own experience with stress or indeed anxiety, and also about how kind of yoga kind of comes into that.
There used to be that term that people used to say a lot, keeping up with the Joneses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the idea being that you would compare your life to that of your next door neighbour. And we've all got that on steroids now, haven't we? Like we've got social media. We're like comparing our lives, of course, to everyone else's. And that becomes hard for everyone anyway, because of course you were like, okay, your friend or someone you don't know is that thing you want. But I think it becomes even harder when you're self-employed and part of your business is, you know, on social media or like. So for us as yoga teachers, I'm sure for you as well, for anyone that is remotely self-employed, you're constantly thinking, okay, that person's doing that. Should I be doing that? Or they seem to be doing well. Oh my God, they're traveling so much. And even though we know, of course, social media is the highlight reel, although some people are doing the extreme now of filming themselves crying on social media. But generally speaking, I'm just not a fan. I'm not a fan. I'm just thinking, wait till you've stopped crying and then film yourself. But that's a whole other thing. But generally speaking, we keep up, you know, we're trying to, you know, stay with other people. And that is stressful for everyone, as I say, particularly the self-employed. And it is for me, you know, despite the fact I know that I'm seeing people's highlight reels, I'm still always feeling bad about what I'm doing or what I'm not doing. And so how do I tackle that? So number one, of course, is having a healthier relationship with external stimuli like social media. Mm-hmm. And also actually becoming less dependent on what people think of you to some degree. So of course there are things that can make us internally happy, or we can get happy from internal sources, or we can get happy from external sources. We can get happy from someone saying, Adam, you look good, or you look great, or liking our photo. Or we can find that intrinsic happiness from doing the things that genuinely make us happy. And so over the years, that's what I try to shift to. Trying to do the things that are about me being happy and content without thinking so much about what other people think of me, or whether I'm getting happy from the fact that I've got a workshop, or I've got a special event, or people are coming to my class or not. And yoga does help with that. In yoga, there is no objective success. In theory, there's no success at all. Of course, if you go to some dynamic classes and you know, there will be like 22-year-olds competing for handstands and dramatic poses, and I was probably one of them when I was 18. But in theory, there is no success to be had in yoga. It's 60 minutes of your day, or 75 minutes or whatever, where you are just having a practice of self-inquiry, using your body as a vehicle for that self-inquiry. And if you want to connect with something deeper than yourself, the universe, or whatever you want to phrase it, the most intimate part of the universe we have access to is our bodies. So I really believe in the value of, whether it be yoga or just movement in general, movement where we get into a zone, movement where we can forget about everything else and really focus on the moment. I think that does wonderful things for your general well-being. And that would be my biggest advice to anyone, is try and to some degree switch off any kind of external need for validation. Try and see things for what they are, not what they appear to be. For instance, social media posts. And actually take some time a day for you to have a practice of some kind of self-inquiry, whatever that is, where ideally there is no success. And that can be hard, because as I said, some people try and succeed in yoga. But even if your self-inquiry is walking around taking photos, people often think, okay, well, I need to get a social media account for my photos, and I need to have a little gallery for my photos. When can I do an exhibition? Or people going for a jog in the autumn. Oh no, I need to do a half marathon. When can I do a marathon? Who should I get to sponsor me for this marathon? Etc. etc. But trying to cut that out and just do things solely because you like doing them, I think, is really important. And yoga, but yoga is one that can really help you bring it in.
This episode of the Karma You podcast is sponsored by my online course, Your Calmest Self. It's a course that gives you the tools to manage your anxiety without having to quit your life, move to an island, and meditate for 10 hours a day. So this course is for you if you're somebody that constantly worries about what other people think of you. You hold yourself back from setting big goals because you're anxious and overwhelmed and unable to move forward with things. It's for you if you flop into bed every night exhausted by another anxious day, wishing you could just switch off and relax. It's for you if you don't speak up about things because you're nervous about getting it wrong or what people will say, whether they'll judge you. And it's for you if you've got a loud inner critic that puts you down all the time and stops you from doing the things that you want to do in your life. If this sounds like you, I'm here to help you change that. In this online course for anxiety, Your Calmer Self, I teach you the tools and techniques to become a calmer and more confident version of yourself. I use powerful hypnotherapy recordings and exercises from cognitive behavioral therapy, NLP, positive psychology, and more. If you'd like to live an anxiety-free life of confidence and calmness, come and take a look at my course at karma-you.com/program. So it's karma-you.com/program.
Love that idea of thinking about yoga as self-inquiry, because it made me think about when I was living in London and going to yoga classes really regularly and how much stuff would come up in a yoga class. I'd be like comparing myself to the person next to me, or just thinking like, oh, how do I, you know, look today, or like resisting the discomfort of a pose, and like all the things that I might struggle with in my everyday life were like contained within that, like coming up in the yoga class. So yeah, it reminded me of that, you saying how it can be about self-inquiry, and can we use that practice to then work through some of those things that are coming up for us?
And part of that is, or something I think is against that, is a lot of people think yoga is about being happy. And I really don't think it is that. I think it's about seeing things for as they are. And so in a yoga practice, ideally, you're not looking for sadness. You're not looking to dig into your childhood trauma and go there. But equally, you're not looking to be happy at every stage. It should just be a case of bearing witness with increasingly less reactivity. So bearing witness to the contents of your mind with less and less reactivity to that, and just seeing things for as they are. Yeah, so yoga isn't a stretching class, and it isn't 60 minutes of joy. It's something really different.
Definitely not your class anyway.
Yeah, and thank you as well for saying that bit about kind of when you're self-employed. Or I imagine, you know, if you work in a certain profession, I know you work in marketing, and you might be looking at other people that work in marketing who are, you know, doing really well, and it's really easy to compare yourself. And it's interesting, I think with yoga, probably like influencers or fashion or coaches, their business, or our business in a way, is kind of built on kind of selling a certain, like, you're going to feel like this when you do yoga, or when you work with this coach, you're going to achieve this. And so it kind of lends itself to just, I don't want to say like showing off, but like just showing the good sides of everything. And it's just, as you say, it's like that highlight reel, isn't it? Of, you know, we don't know what's going behind the curtains of someone's life.
This is why we started our podcast, because we wanted to show that people are messed up.
Yes. Not messed up, but, yeah. You know, not always drinking the green juice and happy as anything.
One tactic that's really worked for me over the years is trying to imagine losing the things I have. So losing the things I have to some degree makes you then appreciate what you have a little bit more. Well, actually, multiple things. Imagining losing what you have makes you appreciate actually having it a little bit more. And through appreciating having it and imagining losing it, you then make the most of it even more, and you're less inclined to think about things you want. And we always do this together. You know, we love this cottage that we've been in here a year now, but we're constantly saying to ourselves as a part of the practice, isn't our cottage lovely? Isn't it amazing? Don't we love it? And we, you know, reflect back and think, you know, if we were even 6 years ago, someone said to us, you know, we'd be living in a lovely cottage, married in the countryside, watching birds in the morning, you'd be like, no way, that's not going to happen. But I think it's very easy to go on this kind of hedonic treadmill, and you adapt, don't you? You just keep adjusting the goalposts of what makes you happy and
always wanting more.
Yeah, you get the thing you want, then you adjust, yeah, just the goalposts. But I think it's so important to practice coming the other back, way, coming yeah. back and appreciating what you have.
Do you have any kind of practice around that? Because I know some people do, like, sounds very morbid, like a death meditation, for example, where they imagine, you know, being buried in the ground, or imagine something. Do you have any kind of process for that, or it's more just you sort of check in with yourself and reflect on that?
Well, I think I've done it two ways previously. I've done it by journaling. Just, well, not journaling, but like almost writing. I don't journal, but like writing bullet points. That's my form of journaling. But equally almost as part of a meditation. So just, you know, even doing it with people, like imagining losing a family member, you know, you visualize that. And by imagining losing that family member, you then think, okay, well, how can I appreciate them more in my daily life while I still have them? But it's also actually, in a sense, good preparation for if that thing does happen, in a sense. You've rehearsed it. And so through exploring all the possibilities of what could happen in the future, although that can be overwhelming in itself, you are fully prepared for everything that can happen to you, and you can respond to that with equanimity and with balance.
I could not do that. I'm like the opposite of that. Adam, he's got this, I don't know if it's a superpower or a hindrance, but with every situation, you will think about every single outcome that could possibly happen. So like he says, so he'd be prepared for all of it. Is that quite stoic, I think?
To some degree. Yeah.
And for me, I am just totally thinking like the best thing's going to happen at every given moment. And if the opposite happens, I'm like, oh my God. You know what? I am a big fan of feeling. And I'm not saying that you know, push feelings away, but I quite like surprises and, you know, life bringing, whether it's a good surprise or not. And I think, again, yoga is really, and sound healing has really helped with the way you react to certain situations. And, you know, if something awful happened to me 5 years ago, I would have just let the sadness and the grief just completely swallowed me whole and just lost myself in this, you know, whirlwind of depression or whatever. But, you know, now I think when, in quotation marks, bad things happen, it sounds really cheesy, but I always think of these things as okay, well, how has this come along to help me grow then? Because I know that it was meant for me, and whatever reason, that's my belief. I always think that things happen to, and this is the way I like to see it, just to help us grow in that moment. And what can I learn from this? How can I move forward with this? How can I help other people as well? Because, you know, if awful things have happened, then I can be more empathetic towards other people that are also experiencing very similar things. And it's all sort of paving the way to lead me to what I'm here on earth to do. And that's just, that's my belief. So I'm a big fan of feeling. And we had a lot happen to us last year, like a lot of grief. And although it was really, really difficult, my relationship to grief and sadness has completely changed. And I just let myself feel it all and, you know, like cry on the bathroom floor and almost hover above myself and witness myself doing it and being like, it's okay. You're totally allowed to feel all these feelings. It's all beautiful. It's all part of what makes you human. You should never be pushing any of this stuff away. It's just a shame that we're not taught emotional intelligence and awareness at school, because I think the world would be a much better place for it. And again, you know, all of these practices have helped so much with all of this. And also having a very lovely, strong partner by your side really helps as well. But yeah, so we're kind of different in that
sense.
But I
think this is what we need to encourage people to realise, that there's different ways that can be equally valid. Really feeling can be valid, but equally, you know, Holly just referenced then strong partner. So what does that mean? It means, okay, strong, stable and consistent. So in this dynamic, there is one of us that isn't following feelings necessarily. That's not a good or bad thing, but through that, we complement each other. Mm. I can hold the space for then Holly to feel, because it could have been different if you were alone in that situation. So I'm not against feelings at all. My view is that, you know, feelings will come, but then for me, I have a choice of whether I hold on to it and indulge it and continue to choose to feel it, or whether I let a feeling come and let it go just as easily. Just like, you know, at a party, there's ticker tape. For a moment, that ticker tape falls into your view. Okay, then it falls back
What's
out.
Ticker tape?
Ticker tape, like is that not, is that a Birmingham phrase? At a party,
I do recognise the name, but I can't imagine what it is.
Well, okay, look, if you're at a big party and all the performance, or someone's just won the X Factor and all that stuff falls down from
like
the ceiling.
Shiny tapes.
What's it called? What's it called?
Just shiny
confetti.
Yeah,
I don't think it's confetti. Anyway, it comes and it goes just as easily. And that's my view is feelings. I like to let them come into view for that split, you know, for a moment.
Nice.
Observe them, observe their nature, and let them go. Not dig around the floor for the ones I want to feel at that time. I just want to let them come in and go just as easily. Yeah. And my view is that real balance and real equanimity and contentment comes from not being too attached to your feelings. And if you decide you always want to be happy, and that's your aim in life, to be happy always, being happy depends on you feeling a certain way. It depends on certain circumstances that aren't entirely in your control. I think real freedom comes from being able to witness emotions come and go without needing to be feeling or experiencing one.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mm.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think probably me and my partner are a bit the same. I don't think he suppresses his feelings, but like he deals with it and then it's gone. Whereas I'm much more like to like cry on the bathroom floor and like have a meltdown. But I don't know. I guess is it different ways of experiencing things, or maybe that. Yeah, I don't know. I guess you've got to find what works for you. And
I always wonder how much of these things could be evolutionary. Like how many of them could be just inherently male traits or female traits?
Yeah.
There were so many interesting behavioural theories. That's why often males are comedians, because that was part of when the development of language, you know, someone who could entertain, as it were, was more likely to... So it's like a peacock showing his feathers. More likely to be attractive in a certain way and had to develop those skills. So I always wonder like how much is... genetic or just in us as males or females, or
there's a really lovely book as well that you told me to read it. It's the one about a boy, How Not to Be a Boy, by a comedian called, he's in Peep Show, can't remember his name, but it's everyone should read it. It's just amazing. It's about how men have been brought up to suppress, or a lot of men have been brought up to suppress their emotions and not talk about them. So even though maybe we think it's a male trait to maybe not talk about your emotions so much, maybe it's just because they've been suppressed, but it's such a great book. And you know which one I mean.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah. It's the nature nurture debate, isn't it? Because I know I've had people on the podcast that have told me, no, men and women's brains are pretty much the same and all the differences are cultural. And then there's other books that are written about like the female brain and how it's so different to men. So I don't know. I don't know what the truth is.
We've got both masculine and feminine energies inside, haven't you? And there's a left side of the brain and the right side of the brain in everyone, which is linked to masculine and feminine. So
I think we've chosen to label it masculine and feminine increasingly. But I think from like a pure evolutionary perspective, there is, I believe, differences from what I understand. Like I feel like I've read multiple books that have explicitly said there are physical differences in the size of certain areas, etc. And you know, we have to look at the animal world and, you know, see animals of different species inherently behave in certain ways. You know, like certain animals that are born will immediately run to water. They just know there's water, I need to go to that. They're not told to go to water. They just know inherently in them they need to run to, I don't know, the nearest source of water, or they need to go to their mother's breast or alike. I think there are things in us that we can't really understand fully what is part of us. But you know, male and female animals of the same species do very different things and yeah. act in very different ways.
Yeah. I remember one study, I talked about this in my book, The Confidence Solution, about how baby boys are very, I don't want to say, I don't know what the right word would be. I can't remember what the word they use in the study, but they kind of need a lot of attention, more attention and kind of reassurance than baby girls need. And that changes once they get to, I think it's like a year and a half, whereby the girls suddenly are the ones that need more kind of, I don't know what the word is, like mollycoddling or looking after or more attention. And there's something that happens whereby perhaps we treat baby boys differently. We think, oh, you know, he's a boy, he'll be all right, you know, and actually they learn then that they not to ask for help or seek comfort in that way. And so I think there's so many things that are very unconscious that we're doing to infants and to children to so that we're getting brought up in very different ways that can lead us to have some of these traits. So there's that aspect of it as well.
And a question could be as well, like how certain things that perhaps were initially evolutionary, how maybe we've then enforced them or made them even stronger through society. For instance, there's a lot of theory that generally speaking, boys are more interested in things and females are more interested in people. Generally young girls will tend to play with figures, nothing Barbie, and like things that are people, babies, whereas boys would tend to go for the trucks and the things and the tools and the hammers. Okay, that's a sweeping generalization, of course, and I'm sure a lot of it has been enforced by we know what we think boys like, so we buy them that toy or we give them that toy, etc. That's certainly a factor to it, but that would explain, you know, if we look back on evolutionary history, that would explain a lot, that, you know, men are interested in the things, the women would be, you know, in the hunter-gathering days, more together as a unit.
Nurturing.
Yeah. Mm. There could be something in that.
Big conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering, you know, you got your podcast, Honestly Unbalanced, and I was wondering what have you learned through that experience? You mentioned there about it being that you're getting people to be honest and to share the other side of their lives that maybe they don't share online. I was curious, you know, what have you learned from that experience?
That everyone has issues. That imposter syndrome is real. Imposter syndrome is real in everyone. So many of our guests have said that they feel that, which is comforting. And that success is not a straight line from A to B, that there's so many ups and downs and, you know, perceived failures along the way. And I guess just that anything is possible as well. We've spoken to such amazing people, and it's so nice as well, because this is kind of what you were saying earlier. It's not really something that we have an end goal with, or even really a goal with. We really just do it because we love chatting to just amazing people, and so it's just naturally growing from there. And yeah, we always come away feeling so buzzing, don't we? What about you? What do you think?
Well, what we've learned, I think one of the things, all the people we've spoken to, again, have their issues, of course, but all of them are successful in their own field. Whatever that might be, they are deemed to be successful in their own field. But, you know, that's success. There is no end to that success. And they're successful and now they're okay. I think the podcast idea was based on Jack Kornfield's book, After the Ecstasy, The Laundry. So he would chat to people of various spiritual and religious traditions, people that to some degree would say they'd reached enlightenment, and the acknowledgement that that enlightenment is less of a you're enlightened and now you're enlightened forever, but it's a moment. And hence, after the ecstasy, the laundry, you have a moment where you feel enlightened and you go back to life, you go back to the worries, you go back to the jealousy, etc. And I think that's important to acknowledge with all these people that we deem to be successful, that number one, they've probably put in a hell of a lot of hard work to get where they are. None of them were overnight successes. None of them just magically decided to do what they're doing in a year were succeeding in it and top of their field. Mm. You know, the yoga teacher didn't go to Bali for 3 weeks and come back and like, okay, now I'm an international yoga teacher. All of them put in a hell of a lot of work to get where they are. But there was also a lot of stress, a lot of luck on the way, just a lot of circumstance and like having certain people around them. And then once they found what would be considered objective success, that didn't necessarily change what was happening internally. It's still the same worries, the same thing. Again, come back to that hedonic adaptation. You know, you hear it all the time from celebrities, how perhaps, you know, unhappy they are And actually, clearly, you know, money, of course, can buy to some degree some freedom to do perhaps some of the things you enjoy more. But in itself, doesn't necessarily bring you happiness. It maybe brings you more people emailing you, more people
success
to compare yourself to. So I guess that's one of the biggest learnings. And it was interesting, you know, to see how people have coped with that and you know, continue to cope with that or continue to struggle with that.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's what I noticed being a therapist, having all sorts of clients, including some really successful kind of millionaire business owners or models. And as their therapist, obviously you're hearing, you know, all their struggles, all the things that, you know, it's so easy to assume someone's successful. And I don't know if it's our brains trying to just make things easier to sort of just label, oh, that person doesn't have any problems. Like we don't what does the brain do? It like it tries to save energy all the time, the brain. So it like generalizes things or sees things in black and white. A lot of these things are because things are too complicated to kind of think about all the nuances. So we just think, oh, that person's, you know, a successful model. They must have it all figured out. They don't struggle with anything. They're happy. They must be happy all the time. And actually you see that other side of how much people do struggle with things. And so, yeah, I think it's a good thing to talk about on the podcast to remind everyone that we're all struggling with something. Everyone's got something going on, and it's never simple. It's not, people aren't happy all the time generally, I don't think.
Yeah. And often the solution is not an external solution. It's doing some kind of work on yourself or with the people immediately around you. Like there's a quote I love, that the guy called Naval Ramikant, he's an angel investor and just a wonderful thinker and modern philosopher. And this quote is that if you can't be happy with a cup of coffee, you won't be happy with a yacht.
So good.
And I just love that. And I think that's
really good.
Yeah, you know, the key to actually finding contentment and freedom in your life is to some degree reducing the things you need to make you happy. And one exercise I love to get people to do, if this is circumstances right, is kind of make a list of 10 things that you would like to do more of, and then put them in the order of how much they cost. And often the top five are probably free. Yeah. Like, you know, for me, it's often I'd like to go on more walks. Mm-hmm. I'd like to read a little bit more. You know, I'd like to do some painting. Most of the things are free.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So I hope people can go and do that. So you write a list of 10 things you'd like to do more, and yeah, how much do they cost? And then ask yourself, you know, why aren't I doing this more? How can I incorporate this more into my life? I love that.
Actually, the way money fits in often is the only way it fits in is if you have to work 24 hours a day to make money to survive, then of course you can't do those things.
Mm.
But as long as you have enough money to have some time to do those enjoyable activities, then you want to win it. But that is the money factor, is you need a certain amount to be able to give yourself the time to do the free activities.
Yeah.
I think that lockdown actually was so valuable in making people realise that they don't need much to be happy. Well, most people, I mean, so many people I spoke to said, oh God, I've just realised that I actually don't need a lot to enjoy life, and just, you know, simple things make me happy. So that's the silver lining in the lockdown anyway. Definitely. Mm. I was one of those people. Just less is more, so much of the time.
Mm. Hard. Yeah, it's hard to compare the lockdown situation, isn't it? Because we say less is more, but equally.
But I suppose it makes you, like, when you're back out of it, then it puts a different perspective on your life in a way, doesn't it?
It's completely. So I think, I think it's certainly put for some people. I think other people have maybe realised actually they need other people around them, or they need certain things. Everyone's had such a different lockdown, haven't they? You know, we don't need a lot, but at the same time, we did get a cottage, which is quite a lot.
But within the cottage, I'm just happy chilling and watching a Netflix film with you.
Yeah.
yeah. It's that thing, isn't it? Like, I often think about this idea of, like, am I going to wake up when I'm 80 and think, I work too much? Why did I work 5 days a week? Why did I not take every single Wednesday off and go and walk in the park or spend more time with my family? Mm. And I'm lucky that I do have a lot of flexibility in my work and I can take days off. But I think there's so many of us who, some people do have the choice, some people don't, but I think a lot of us are in that mindset of, I need to work more to make more money, to buy more, to be on that kind of treadmill. Mm. And I think we would be happy if we could I think they're thinking about putting it down to a 4-day week, aren't they, the government, to help with climate change or something. I think that will probably be quite a good thing for the world. Yeah.
I think so.
I think the relationship with money, I think, is a really important factor for people. There's a lot of the people that I find work the hardest, spend the most. Not necessarily in terms of quantity, but spend the money they have. I read something the other day, and I don't entirely agree with it, but there was something to it. And it was like, if you give a poor person, £100, they'll buy, or no, if you give a poor person £1,000, they'll buy an iPhone. If you give a rich person £1,000, they invest it. It's caveats to that, of course. That is assuming, I guess, a poor person has all their needs covered in terms of rent and and alike and food, etc. But it's an interesting thing. I think a lot of us earn money, work hard to spend it. And I think one thing we can do, and I do this a lot, we actually did it last night about getting a taxi. Because at the moment, you know, the yoga industry isn't that lucrative. Particularly people are struggling to come back to classes. And I was like, okay, so I put things in perspective of how much I'd need to work to get that. So if I get a taxi home last night, for instance, how much would that actually cost in terms of hours worked? And I think that's a really useful activity for people in terms of building their relationship with money and time, is how much is buying this iPhone in terms of hours? If buying a new iPhone is literally a month work, is it really what you need? Because you think working that month, working as hard as you do that month, the hours that you do, the stress that you do, the getting on the tube, the travel of hassling, all the stress involved with that work, all of that for an iPhone and for that temporary satisfaction. So I think it's an interesting way to reframe our relationship with money and time.
Yeah. Time is money. Money is time. See, can we, I guess you can always get more money, but you can't get your time back as well.
I feel like such an arsehole quoting, I think it was... Was it Epicurus or Seneca? I think it was Seneca. And it was, we act like immortals in all we desire, but mortals in all we fear. I might have misquoted it. But the idea being that in the things that we want, we act like we're going to live forever and we have all the time in the world. And yeah, the things that scare us, we hedge up.
Maybe we come back afterwards, though.
Well, I hope so. I like to think so. I'm going to need a few goes at this. A few more goes. I wanted to ask you, this is probably the last question, but I kind of wanted to ask you about how, because it seems like you work together in certain aspects. So you do the podcast together. Do you do other things together? Like maybe you do events together, I think. But I'm wondering like how you find it working together. I've done bits of work with my partner, but I find it quite challenging, I have to say. We trigger each other a lot in that area. So, I wanted to hear about how you work together and how do you keep a kind of healthy relationship, through that.
Can I just say one thing about the foundation of relationships with us? We've always talked about this idea that we are choosing to be in this together. How one of us is emotionally will have a direct effect on how the other one is. Of course, we're kind of intrinsically linked for life now in terms of how we are. And that affects how we interact together. And we don't really row. We don't really have arguments. And if we do have a disagreement, we're very quick to either apologize or rectify it. Because me making Holly upset, or me holding a grudge against Holly, or me being resentful, or trying to sulk to make her pay for something, it's me drinking a cup of poison myself as well. Not only is it making her unhappy, this person I say I love, but it's going to ultimately make me unhappy and make my life unhappy. So I think that as a foundation for the relationship then really informed the foundation for working together. That isn't, I guess...
Not to say we don't get a little bit annoyed with each other every now and again.
But it's kind of nip.
In a loving way.
But then it's kind of, it can be nipped in the bud quite quickly. So yes, you have the podcast together. Yes, we do some retreats together and workshops, etc. And I think it's acknowledging as a couple what your skills are, right? What are you good at? Holly's good with people. So if we're on a retreat, Holly talks to everyone, links with people. Holly will put a cross at the end of an email. I will be as sure as possible.
You don't even know it's a cross. Says it all.
Holly will give them some blessing at the end. But I think that really... just knowing what you're both good at and just like going with that, I think, is really important.
Yeah, because we're very different, you know, very yin and yang. But I think we said recently we're different, but similar in the ways that matter, as in, you know, our values are aligned and we both want similar things from life and we both love and trust each other. And I think if you've got your values in place and you have all those, you know, foundational bricks like trust, respect, kindness, then I think you can kind of, you know, even if you're getting triggered and you argue a little bit within that, which of course we do, you can, at least you've got that as the foundation, you can work, you can work around that. And
and you only mentioned differences there. I think most of us are attracted to our partners because there were some differences that we find in some way endearing. But there's normally, let's take a quality like Holly is quite ready to explore the world at any moment and quite kind of it would jump into things. I love that about her, but that quality also manifests in the opposite way, in that Holly can be really like just not on it in terms of like organization and excel and ditzy. And you have to accept that. I think it's really important to accept the fact that when, you know, for me, Holly loves the fact I'm really organized and on it and diary management, I want to do things. But that means I really hate changing schedules and I really don't like things that aren't planned. So you have to always accept that for something you find endearing about someone, that quality has an opposite as well, and you have to accept both of those.
Yeah, flip it around the other way as well. Yeah, like if there's something annoying about someone, there's the other end of the spectrum, which is really, which balances out. And it's, and yeah, it's just learning to love all of the flaws and the imperfections. And yeah, I think.
Yeah, I like that idea of there being kind of like a flip side to things. Like I noticed that about Aidan, I might think, oh, he's, you know, he's got this very creative side. He's got this like mindset, like anything's possible. But that can be quite annoying because it can like take him off on weird tangents. And like, I'm like, what's sticking to the plan? Sticking to the plan. But if I try and suppress that side of him, I'm also going to suppress that beautiful creative aspect of him. So it's like embracing all parts of a person, or trying to see the good in the in the more irritating traits. Yeah. Well, irritating to me at least. Yeah, love that.
No point trying to change someone.
Yeah, that's a whole kind of topic in itself, trying to change people. Tried a lot of that. That usually backfires and makes people quite resistant.
Doesn't work.
I suppose lastly, yeah, thank you so much for everything you shared. It's been really interesting. We've gone down some like interesting little roads, and yeah, I'm sure we could have really long discussions, but I'd love to know just lastly where people can find out more about you, what you offer. Do you want to share about your podcast again, that sort of thing?
Yeah, Holly hates doing this.
This is not my bag. This is Adam's.
I have to like stand behind Holly at events and actually like whisper in her ear and mention the podcast.
I never market myself.
Yeah, so the podcast is honestly imbalanced. You can get it anywhere, and we've had all sorts of guests from kind of like yoga teachers to yourself to musicians to chefs. All sorts, anyone loosely involved in helping other people make their lives a little bit better. So it started as yoga, but now it's everything. Mm-hmm. We've got that. We've got our own platform on thehustlers.com where I upload lots of classes. Holly uploads sound journeys. It's just thehustlers.com. There's a sale on at the moment. Black Friday 40, all caps, gives 40% off stuff. You can find out on the website. And then also we do retreats together. We teach in London. Holly has a lovely community of women called Soul Stretch.
Yeah, I've just launched a new sound healing only membership actually, online. So weekly sound healing classes are all pre-recorded as well. So my website's hollyhustler.com and it's all on there if you're interested. There's a couple of free weeks as well that you can use.
Yeah, and just people can look at our websites or social media. It's Adam Hustler. And then I am Holly Hustler. And then adamhustler.com and hollyhustler.com. Easy.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for everything you've shared.
Thank you for having us.
You have been listening to the Karma You podcast with me, Chloe Bretheridge. Don't forget, you can download loads of freebies for anxiety and confidence at my website, karmayou.com. You can also find out about my app and my one-on-one sessions. Please do subscribe to this podcast in the Apple Podcast app. And if you have enjoyed it or found it helpful, please leave me a review. It makes a massive difference to helping the podcast get discovered by other people. And come on over and find me on Instagram. I'm hanging out there every day. You can find me at Chloe Bretheridge. Let me know what you thought of this episode. And please do share it with anyone who might need to hear this today. So I'm sending you loads of love and I hope you have a brilliant week ahead.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.